League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The ADVFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 355. On the podcast today, I've got the city's Mr. Fix-It, Adam Reynolds. There's not a bad word said about this guy. He takes basically shells and reverses assets into them and transforms them into excellent companies. So just check out the progress of Optibotics or Premeter. And he's now, you know, attempting to do that with New World Oil and Gas. He's just been, you know, voted onto the board of directors there. So not a lot has gone on so far. But he has ambitions to, you know, give value to shareholders. And I chat with Adam in between one of his roadshow presentations. So thanks so much for coming on, Adam, and spending some time. Very busy man. Also on the podcast, Martin. Now, I feature traders and investors on the podcast regularly, and I want to do it more regularly. And the more different stories I get, the better. Now, Martin, so I love the podcast. We follow each other on Twitter. By the way, go to sharepickers.com if you want to follow Martin. Click the link. And he said, do you want a bad investor trader come on the podcast? And I thought about it. I had a laugh. And I thought, yes, all kinds of stories are welcome, you know. And Martin used to invest in bigger cap stocks, and he's moved down the market cap spectrum to AIM, and he discovered it's a different game. AIM is a different game to the big stocks, and he's been learning, and he goes through some of the biggest mistakes he's made, and he's lost quite a bit of cash on some mistakes. He's got out, actually. He's escaped on some of them, but he takes us through what mistakes he's made, underlines the lessons he's learned, and then it highlights the company he's in at the moment that he has, that he sees potential in. So that's very interesting indeed to hear Martin's story. And also got today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. If you know of a penny stock that has potential, then click the link here at sharepickers.com, and it'll take you through to a form. Just fill that in, please. I think they've got about two or three in the waiting list, that's all at the moment. So jump on board, and you could have your suggestion later on in the week. Also, this podcast is dedicated to Dan MUFC Butler, who gave me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes. I've now got over 115 5-star reviews on iTunes. And by all means, if you want the podcast dedicated to you, then click the link here at sharepickers.com and fill out. Just tell me anything, what you do while you listen to the podcast, and what you're up to when you listen. And joining me on the podcast right now is the one, the only, Adam Reynolds. Adam, you come with a good bit of recommendation. I don't know anyone at the moment who's got a bad word to say about you. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
That's an absolute pleasure, Justin. It's probably because the company has performed quite well, really, I suppose, over the last couple of years. So, what I do, I think, really, is I just specialize in trying to take difficult situations, which are sort of, you know, basket case AIM businesses, where, you know, often shareholders have lost absolutely everything, and, you know, the next stage for them would be an administrator would be appointed. That to me has interest because they have a quotation that can be used, and because I've been specialising in that sort of life science med tech sector for probably the last sort of 7 or 8 years. There's some very good people and good quality people that I work with, who are more the technicians than me, but there's, you know, some very good private businesses that often need a little bit of funding and would like to have a listing. So by taking a struggling AIM business, by sorting out the creditors, and often those creditors are usually the professionals, and if they want to work with you going forward, they'll take a percentage in the pound. Then I'm prepared to write a check out personally to fund the shell, to give it enough working capital until we then do a much larger transaction via a reverse takeover within that sort of med tech, you know, life science field. At that time, or just prior to the reversal, I'm usually sort of chairman of the PLC. I'm then very happy to step down to become a non-exec or come off the board and allow people with probably much more technical experience in the sector to run it, but I will keep a watching brief and then try and build shareholder value. And as I go through, although I, when I'm refinancing a business, I will probably invest in at a much lower price to the prevailing share price. If I do that, I'll always give the existing shareholders the opportunity to subscribe via an open offer. And I think that to me is so important, because you often see so many companies where they forget the long-suffering private shareholders who have usually lost everything. They'll bring institutional investors in at a discount to the price that original shareholders are in at. And the institutions have a fantastic run, but often the private shareholders get a pretty raw deal. So I've always sort of thought that the fair way would be, you know, I've got a much bigger stake, but I would do sort of a one-for-one open offer for the original shareholders, just to give everybody a chance. If they don't take it up, I'm happy to underwrite it. And then if we can, happy to back my own judgment, try and find the right business to go in, try and find a business that we can de-risk quite quickly, and try and find an area that is, the next growth area within that life science field. You know, and the two companies that I've been passionate about over the last 2 years, one is Opli Biotics, which is quoted, and one is Promator, which is quoted, and both. I think I've been very lucky where the timing was right. The management were superb in both businesses, and then it allowed for shareholders to do well who came in at the same time as I came in. So, yeah, it's good. What I do is not particularly clever. I think most people, if they could put their mind to it, could do it. It's just that those opportunities do arise where often the brokers or the nomads who look after those companies, once they've fallen, once they've withered on the vine, they're not interested because the company's not paying them any fees. So if you can then put it back on its feet again, you've got a great opportunity. So yeah, I mean, these guys could do it if they're prepared to waive their fees for a period of time and put their own money in. But that's what I do.
Okay. Well, I think you're doing yourself a disservice here because you've got a good track record now, and like I said, people really did applaud when you came on the board there. So let's go through the story of New World Oil and Gas. So how did someone get in contact? What happened there originally?
Yeah, that was interesting actually, because I was approached by an action group. There's an action group who really opposed the board at New World Oil. And, over the period, I think since New World had been a public company, they've raised about £29 million and they've gone through £27 million. So the track record of the historic management isn't great. So I was asked by, it was effectively two action groups who wanted to put a representative onto the board to try and really probably stabilize the ship. And they spoke for, they probably spoke for about 20-25% of the equity. They had given the board a hard time, which was the right thing to do, because I mean the board had performed pretty badly through the Nomad. Beaumont Cornish, they brought on a chairman called Chris Enchcombe, who I think is very good, and I think Chris probably had it. I think he was probably tarnished with the same brush as the other directors, that he was responsible for the disaster that the company had gone through. And I think that's probably a little bit unfair, because I think he's trying to sort of get things back onto the straight and narrow. So I was appointed to the board, when was it, a week last Wednesday. I've already had a call with various members of the historic board. And I think that what we'll do, the first thing was to establish really what the directors' views were, what they wanted to do, and to also get my view on what we should do. What I didn't want the company doing was chasing more sort of wildcat, sort of oil exploration style transactions. I wanted to make sure that the cash was what I thought the cash was. I wanted to make sure that the payables were what I thought they were, and also what the receivables were. So, I've only been on the board really for sort of about 12 days, but, from what I can see so far, everyone is, I've got the information that I require. We will sit down, we'll find the right business to reverse into New World Oil, and we'll do that. Probably, it won't be before Christmas. I think one has to be sensible. Let's get the ship stable, which I think we're getting the ship stable. It's getting where I want it to get. And then in the new year, we'll look to put something into New World, which hopefully over a period of time, will change the direction of the company historically. And again, you know, same thing, if I do it, and if it's a project from, you know, that I put in, and if we were to raise any more money, I'd also give shareholders the opportunity to also get involved again if they wish to. So, yeah, at the moment it's early days, but I think it just needed a bit of correction and a bit of stability to move it forward, because okay. The way it was going, it wasn't going. I didn't think it was going to go very far. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a couple of questions here from investors in New World. You may be able to answer them. You may not. But let's give them a shot. First question is: when do you expect long-term suffering shareholders to see some value brought into the company? Are you sort of suggested next year
I mean it's very difficult to pin a date on it when it's going to be, but in the first 6 months of 2016 there will be a deal for New World Oil. I'd love to say there'll be a deal in January. I don't want to be held to a specific date, but I wouldn't have joined the board if I didn't think I could do something with it and put something into it. I think also what shareholders and external investors have to realize is that, you know, a lot of these transactions I've done in the past, it does take 5 to 6 months from start to finish. You know, I have done some that have taken just 90 days, but we have pulled all the stops out to do those. So, you know, I think sometimes investors think that you can just get a magic wand and it's done and dusted and, you know, there you go. From by the time you spot something to by the time you actually put it in there, and by the time you've had the general meeting, and by the time you've raised funding, and by the time you've done, you know, A to Z, there is usually a 6 month time period. I am working on something, I am looking at something, but it will be next year, and hopefully we'll have something done within the first 6 months of the year.
Marvellous. Okay, next question. What industries are you looking at for a company to reverse into new, and what value of company would sit right?
that's a great question. If I could get something within the life science sector, whether it be sort of the diagnostics area, then great. Size-wise, you know, something 10 million plus, because I think, you know, what you've got to remember is that the beauty, the bigger the deal, the cost of doing a deal is the same, whether it be tiny or whether it be larger. I mean, if I could find a 20, 25 million pound deal, then great, that's what I would do. It can be funded, which I don't think there's too much of an issue on that, as long as it's the right transaction. And, you know, and there are things I'm looking at, but you've got to make sure it's the right transaction, because you're only as good as your last deal. You know, I mean, there's a business I could probably buy tomorrow, but I think one's rushing it, and the whole business of doing shells and trying to create value or trying to put deals together, it's all based upon reputation, and people will only remember you on your last transaction. So that's why when we find something for New World Oil, it has to, I hope it has to be right.
Mm-hmm. Will you raise any funds for the new assets?
If I acquire something, will I raise any funds? It all depends upon the size of the transaction. And as I've just hinted on the previous question, I'd rather do a larger transaction than a smaller transaction, because the work involved is really identical, apart from raising the fund. So I suppose you could look at that in one way and say, yes, we will. So, you know, I mean, nothing is written in stone, because I haven't got the transaction at the moment. But, you know, if we find something, I'd like it to be larger rather than smaller. And if it is larger, it may require more working capital.
Okay. What is the current cash position, and what has the company burned since placing in July?
I probably can. Yes, I do know what it is. It's not in the public domain, but I, as I said earlier in the interview, I got the numbers last week. I haven't actually seen the bank statement, but from the numbers I was told, it was what I thought it was. It was very close to what I thought it was going to be, so I'm not that disappointed. If that answers the question enough without giving too much away.
Yeah, that's fine. Next question is, how clean is the shell? And can you explain this as well for people?
Yeah, I mean, the shell, it's not the cleanest shell I have been involved with, because there are some, there's a Belize license, there's a bit of infrastructure, you know, paperwork infrastructure from the Danish side they had. There's a few other things flying around there. I mean, it won't take a rocket scientist to actually close it all down, but one's got to be a bit ruthless in how you do it. So there are a few things. The key area, I don't think there are any hugely hidden liabilities. That is the key. There's a fair bit of administration to do. That administration, is happening because, you know, obviously they abandoned the Danish side. Okay, right, we've just got to sort of get everything closed, boxed off and sorted out. Belize have extended it, but yeah, fine. From my perspective, I don't want to throw huge amounts of money at it. I think that there's some administrative housekeeping to do, which is being done and will be done and will be done quickly.
Marvellous. Okay, and just the last question: why did you choose New World Oil and Gas?
I didn't choose it. Someone put me in to help them out. I was there to help shareholders. Okay, it was potentially quite a nice shell because of the cash position. Yeah. Somebody asked me if I'd have a look at it, and I said I would. There wasn't a great deal of visibility when you looked at it from various different RNSs and everything else. It was just difficult to get a grip of it. But you know, I realized if the amount of cash was what I thought it was and what I was told it was, then it would make quite a nice opportunity. So that sort of follows on to the previous question is that, you know, really there is a bit of tidying up to do, and I think if you tidy it up and you've got the cash in there, then it is a nice opportunity. It's a nice base to start as a platform, because some of the platforms I've had in the past have needed more tidying up. They've needed more money going in there. But you know, it's I've had cleaner ones in the past. I've had worse ones in the past. It sits okay. What we need to do is just finish off tidying the whole situation up.
Marvellous. And right now, if you could, in percentage terms, allocate percentage time-wise, what time are you spending, as compared to your other businesses, on New World Oil and Gas?
At the moment, yeah, I mean, I probably did, you know, only half a day last week, because I think the appointment only came to, although the AGM was 2 weeks ago today. We weren't notified until a week last Thursday. So, you know, I had a very, very long call on Monday of last week. Looked at a couple of opportunities for them last week. Last week I probably didn't spend a lot of time on it. But, you know, as time goes on and some of my other commitments that I've got, because this week I'm just very tied up on a couple of things I'm doing on something else. Once all that sort of slows down, I will be spending a lot more time on New World Oil, and you know, it'll be a major focus to find a transaction for it.
Okay, and it's a last one. This is just from me. It's a cheeky one, but have you earmarked a particular asset there, or are you still looking around, or is there one in particular you're thinking that could really work?
I'm looking around. But I think that with some of the connections, contacts, and people, yeah, that I know that I'm very good friends with within the industry. There will be some very nice opportunities. I mean, I wish I'd had New World Oil probably 3 or 4 months previously, because there was something then that I saw a private asset. They took money via an EIS fund, which means they can't really reverse into New World Oil because they will lose their EIS status because it's a change of control or change of topco. If I'd had New World Oil at the time, that would have been absolutely perfect. That company reversing in there would have been absolutely perfect, and it would have been, I think, a wonderful reversal and listing for the market. It didn't happen because a lot of these things, life's all about timing, isn't it, to be perfectly honest? But I mean, it was a great opportunity. I don't think that one will come again because there was one EIS fund that put all the money in, and they would probably just list it directly on the market rather than reverse takeover. But there's things like that. There'll be things around that we don't even know about at the moment that will come, as I think, will probably come our way. I think it's just all about having, you know, contacts and have done transactions in the past and just been very, very straight with everybody in the past, wherever I've dealt, that people come back to you to offer you, you know, other opportunities.
Yeah, okay. And sort of, I did say that was the last one, but one more. So how confident, Adam, are you in, you know, creating shareholder value here over the next few years?
I think if you give me time, I think that all of a sudden, you know, if everyone wants to go, if I get a big bust up with the board and you know, they dig their heels in and people are stupid, then it will take longer than expected. I mean, I'm only going to do this if, you know, A, I want to make shareholders money, but B, I'd also like to make myself some money. And at the moment, I don't have a stake. I think that's the interesting part. Usually, I've got stakes in these things. I will have a stake in this as we go through at some stage. I don't have a stake at the moment. You know, if I'm buying a stake in something, then I will make sure that shareholders will make money as we go through. But as I say, I haven't got a stake yet. We've got to find the right opportunity and get the, you know, if it's a reversal, it needs funding, that's when I'll invest money and buy a stake in the business and you know, I'll offer something to shareholders as we go through. But, you know, I'm very sort of mindful that shareholders have had the most appalling ride in New World Oil over the years. And this is about trying to find a good transaction that fits, and hopefully we can redress, you know, sort of some of the balance that, you know, some of the deficit that's happened, you know, over the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
Marvellous. Adam, thank you very much for coming on and talking to me. And listen, do come on again when you have more news you can impart.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much indeed.
Okay, it's time for today's penny stock with potential, suggested by Martin. Not Martin we just had on, or will have on, sorry, he hasn't been on yet. It's different Martin, Martin Carfrey. So what's the name and ticker symbol of the company you recommend? Science and Sport. Yeah, I've read about these. SIS is ticker. What does the company do? Manufactures and markets high-end sports drinks /supplements. Would you say this is a short, medium, long-term investment? Medium, 3 to 5 years. How many shares does the company have in issues? 40 million. What's the current price and market cap of the company? It's 59 pence, 23.5 million. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, run by ex-LucasAid Global Director for its global expansion. Number two, only sports supplements business with highest anti-doping credentials. That's anti-doping brackets. Number three, increase in revenue steadily, building brand via top-end athlete endorsements, introducing new products, opening new distribution channels, and resonates with recent doping scandals. That's Science and Sport, SIS. Check them out. Don't forget, do your own research before making any investment. Joining me on the podcast right now is someone called Martin. Who's Martin, first of all, thanks for coming on.
No problems, Justin.
Now, originally, every now and again, I obviously interview investors, traders who've made a bit of money there on AIM, doing quite well. Some of them are full-time, some of them part-time. And then Martin got in contact with me and sort of tongue-in-cheek sort of message saying, how do you fancy interviewing the worst investor trader? And I thought, yeah, there could be something in this because, you know, there's lessons to be learned. And I'm not saying you are the worst, Mark, but you've had a couple of stinkers, haven't you, that you've hopefully learned from. So first of all, Mark, when did you first start investing?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I wouldn't say I was the worst trader because I've still got some money.
Exactly. The worst trader has skint. They've borrowed money. They've lost that money. And it's somebody else's money they've lost as well. So that's the worst trader.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're still in the game. So essentially, you are doing something right. You know, with AIM, that's no mean feat. Because like I said, I think about 75% of people lose their money over AIM in the last 20 years. So, So first of all, Mark, when did you start investing, fella?
Yeah, I mean, I initially started in the main markets sort of around 2000. Early 2000s, really, mainly on the large companies. I was working in banking at the time, and was introduced to shares through share schemes and things like that. I lost a lot of money during the credit crunch on those, but again, that was a lesson learned on not being greedy, I suppose, on that side. And also, who could have predicted what was going on? We didn't know even working at the bank at the time. But I also saw sort of that downturn as a positivity, really. I bought a couple of the banks near the bottom because I knew they were actually solid businesses. Looking at the fundamentals, I've worked in as a business manager for the bank I was working at the time. So I could read a balance sheet. I understood about the margins that the banks were making, and actually the assets were sound. They were in a stronger position, and they looked. So two examples, I bought Lloyds about 30p and sold at 75p, so about 150% gain there. Mm-hmm. RBS, again, bought about 10p, this is pre-consolidation, sold at about 39p at the time, which was £3.90 in today's money.
Yeah.
And also I bought a couple of house builders, notably Taylor Wimpey. This was actually off a tip from a customer of mine. Mm-hmm. he'd actually perhaps fraudulently borrowed money from the bank to buy shares in Taylor Wimpey because he could see that it was at the bottom of the market. But I bought in around 45p. They'd sold not that long ago, actually, about at 175.
Nice.
So nearly 300% gain on there. So
hang on then. You're doing quite well by the sounds of it. So,
well, this is before I've discovered AIM.
Yeah, you discovered AIM then, and AIM is a tricky thing. Like, so I'm the same. I was in bigger caps. And I've been enticed in because it's a bit more exciting and there's a chance to earn almost triple-digit percentage gains over one day, isn't there? So I was enticed in. So you know, what's the difference? Where did you start? Name a couple of shares, and let's start with a couple of shares you invested in that went wrong.
Well, the first one, I suppose the lesson is one that you always talk about, is don't buy a spike.
Mm-hmm.
And it was around this sort of time last year I bought Kibo Mining when they just announced sort of a joint venture with Metal Tiger.
Yeah.
I'd only literally just spotted the rise on the top risers charts and didn't even know a lot about the company, read a few tweets, which I wasn't using Twitter for investing at the time. I just thought I'd search to see if there's anything on there because I use it personally. Mm-hmm. And also looking at some bulletin boards, and obviously it was a ramp fest. Oh, this is going to a pound, sort of thing. And I just thought, you know, I'll chuck a little bit of money in here, just as a punt. I don't really know a lot about the company. It's risen about 40% today. Let's see how it goes. By the close of that day, I was up a little bit, mm-hmm. But then within a couple of days, it had gone from 12p when I bought in, which was literally the very top, back down to 8p. Mm-hmm. So I'd already lost 25%. Within a couple of days, and then it just kept sort of trickling back down. I mean, not in great sums, it just worked its way down because of news flow. And I just kept chucking money at it to try and average down, think, oh, it's going to turn around. Everybody's saying so. No, it didn't. I managed to average down quite considerably over sort of 6 month period, and I did make a little bit of money back in the end with sort of 5%, but I've sold most of that holding now. I've only got a very small holding at that time, but I suppose the lesson there is don't buy on spikes, which, as you've said many times, you still do. It's the fear of missing out.
Yeah, that's it. Sure. That's as an emotional being, you know, it's humans, we do that. And also, you notice that stocks attract the most attention when they are spiking, and so, you know, and everyone in it is saying this will go, keep going, and so you sort of buy into that because, you know, yeah. I can see the chart here, and keep in mind it's a stratospheric rise. That rise went from 2 pence, just to put it in perspective, up to nearly 14 pence in a couple of trading sessions. And so, you know, and that's the kind of that's what penny stocks are about. People love, they want that, you know, don't they? And so you buy in like that, and like I said, you bought not far off the peak there, which is a phenomenal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Do you know what, you had a talent for picking the top. That's the trouble is you're buying, not selling, and you know. So that is obviously. But so the lesson you learned essentially there is what: don't buy spikes. Is that the case?
Yes, I'd say for anyone who's new to investing, if you see a spike on a day, don't just buy it because it's gone up. Have a look into why it's gone up and historical prices as well. So where's it come from? Mm-hmm. Is that perhaps more a realistic valuation of the company? You'll probably find 9 times out of 10 it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's going to go to spike, everything that goes up must come down, in my opinion. You know, nothing's bulletproof. So I think,
you know, it's funny you were good at reading balance sheets, you knew your way around a balance sheet, and yet you didn't look at a balance sheet for Kibo Mining at all. You just went on the complete just hearsay, basically, which is it's not enough. You know, all humans do that, and that's why the amazing investors are able to switch that emotional side off and just say, well, hang on a sec, let's look at the balance sheet here, let's look at the contracts, let's it was coming in, let's look at the cash, look at the assets, and they'll do that, you know, and then you can closely say that company is well overvalued, you know, and it's an expensive lesson, but that's it about trading. The good thing is, so, I mean, what kind of money did you have on that? Did you have a lot of money on that?
Not really. I mean, I only started trading on AIM at the beginning, at that point, really, a couple of £1,000 initially. I think I put in about £1,600 in that originally.
Yeah.
So okay. Quite a big chunk. And then, as I say, I sold it. I probably scaled in up to about 3,000 over the time.
Yeah. Okay. So what?
And then sold.
Yeah. And you see, so you didn't lose, did you lose money on that?
at the moment, I'm slightly down on paper, but in terms of actually what I've bought and sold, I'm about 5% up, or thereabouts. So actually what I sold cash, I've made a little bit. So I'm down on paper with what I've got left, because the price has gone down a bit in the, over the last couple of weeks. But it's one that's, it's just, I think the company itself's got quite good potential if it delivers the power project that it's working on. And I don't want to go into too much detail because we don't want to talk about some other things, but you know, it's potentially worth looking at now because it's quite a low price now.
I was going to say, look at the price now, and it's literally, I'm going to draw a line that, you know, that's almost 3 pence level, where it's that's almost a 6 month low, and so you know, the potential's still there. Like, you know, it's almost like that. It's like stocks now that I quite like, and I'm holding back on them. And one of them is StratAero. I know that's got a huge potential, but at the moment it's rising quickly, and I think, well, hang on, you know, the contracts are going to come in parity, but they haven't come in yet. But I still think it's a little overvalued considering how much contracts. So I'm sitting back and waiting. So I'm convinced it'll come back, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. I'll let it go. It's fine. You know, but I don't want to buy it at current high, and so that's the way it goes. And it's having that, and that takes a while to learn that, doesn't it? You know, I bought on spikes so many times, believing the hype, and it's an expensive lesson. So okay, let's move on then from Kibo. Another stock you put money into that was that didn't, you know, serve you well.
Okay, now I mean, if anyone follows me on Twitter, then know where I'm going to go with the next one. Sort of a bit of background reading. So around about February, I found Doc Holliday on Twitter, and saw a couple of podcasts. And the first one I actually listened to was with Daniel Levy with Sefton Resources.
Yeah.
And this was back in February when he'd sort of just come in as interim chairman. And there was a big turnaround story there, and I bought it. And at the time, I think I bought it in about 0.085p, so not a bad price at the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I actually really bought into this store, and I topped up a bit more with some of the funds I'd made. You know, got back from Kibo Mining, particularly. I also, you know, over a few months period, I traded a few other bits and pieces. UCOG, UK Oil and Gas, on the day that they had that big oil discovery that was in the press, I bagged on that from 1.5p to 3p. I bought it in the morning, sold at 3p later on that day. New World Oil and Gas, when that short squeeze was going on, I made quite a bit of money on there, but I piled it all into Sefton. So I say a lot of money. I mean, my portfolio at the peak, including Sefton, was around about £12,000, which I started with two and a half thousand, so it'd gone up quite considerably over a 4 or 5 month period. Yeah, I suppose the Sefton, so I'd piled in quite a bit of money. I started at 0.085p. I'd averaged up to 0.16, just sort of topping up when it was getting towards its peak, and it went up to 0.38p. And I actually carried on buying more. This was on the back of perhaps, I'm just trying to think of the word I'm looking for. It's believing everything you hear and read, really.
Yeah, well, hype again, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's more on the hype rather than the spike. So every person on the bulletin boards, you can't look at Sefton there because they've delisted. But it was all very much, this is going to a penny, you know. And there were certain sort of bloggers perhaps touting inside information. And I actually got in touch with one of these bloggers on Twitter by direct message. And he was actually providing me with a lot of, I assume now there's insider information that he'd been fed by the company. And he was actually putting all this information out in the open as well on a blog. Yeah. And he was sort of direct messaging me around when it was in 0.3s, saying, oh, this is going to 5p. There's going to be a reverse takeover with a large Indonesian company. The share price will go to 5p, keep buying. And I did. I kept putting more and more money in it. At the point, as I say, it was about £12,000 was my peak in AIM. Mm. And half of that was within Sefton Resources. Wow. And then the next thing happened. It was sort of Friday, the 8th of May. A couple of people who were linked to the company tweeted to say they weren't selling. Mm-hmm. And there's more news to come. Mm-hmm. And I actually bought more on that day, which was at the 0.38. Only a small amount, But then the next thing, the following Monday morning, the 11th of May, there's an R&S saying that both of those people had sold to less than 3%, so effectively sold the lot. The share price that day crashed to 0.18, so by that time I'd averaged up to 0.21, so I was down now on the investment, having gone from originally 0.085 to 0.38 from my first investment. It's about 300% up. I didn't sell anything. So it crashed down to 0.18. There was further tweets and blogs from individuals who were involved confirming why they'd sold out. Price started creeping back up to 0.28. And then there was more delays from the company, not knowing what was going on. And the share price then started going down after a couple of weeks, it was down to 0.11. And I then tried to try and trade out of it intraday. So buying and selling spikes, but again, that didn't happen. It did sort of go back up to 0.18 again, so I was about break even, and then I still held. And then the next day, I know there was the discounted placing from the price was 0.12 at the close of the day previous, and the placing came out at 0.065, so almost a 50% placing.
Yeah.
Now, everybody blamed at the time Raylene Whitford for that decision, who was obviously featured on your podcast quite regularly during the summer, and I think she was left with an impossible task, if I'm honest. Yeah. Perhaps she was new to that sort of environment, was misguided.
So the placing happened, and
the share price went down. It never went above 0.08 again. I again tried to trade out of it too, and again I did make a little bit back, but not enough, and eventually sold out circa 80% loss.
Wow.
And that was in the EGM call, which most people know about if they followed the story. And now the company's delisted. Following the.
So at least you got up with 20%.
It's a big lesson. At least I've got out. There's going to be people now who are trapped in. It's delisted with more money than I had.
Yeah.
They might never see the money again. At least I just had to cut my loss and thought, you know what, I can't be dealing with the emotional stress of this, because I was having sleepless nights thinking about it at the time.
If there's one lesson to learn from that, what do you learn?
It's a bit of a harsh one, but don't trust anyone, and make your own mind up. And there's probably several lessons. There's also take profit when you've got it. With AIM, I've learned that, you know, I'd say Sefton Resources for me was the story of AIM. It was the pump of the share price, the dump, the hype, you know, selling on, people buying in on spikes. There's many people bought at the top, you know, on the, yeah. And there was a lot, I think there was an element of market abuse from certain individuals, but that seemed to be commonplace. I didn't know this coming from perhaps the main market, which you would say on the whole all has better corporate governance. I think I was quite, as you said, wet behind the ears. And I thought AIM would be the same, and clearly it's not.
I mean, I suppose at the end of the day, all you can do is like I say, is learn from that, isn't it? And don't trust individuals and do your own research, I suppose, you know. And I just think, you know, again, I'm going more towards, I've always looked at sort of balance sheets, but now, especially on AIM, I'm looking at them more and more. And, you know, just to see what is, you know, the funding behind this company, how much money do they have, you know, where is it going? Because I think, I don't think there's any risk, well, not, there is risk in all investments.
Yeah.
But if you do loads of research on one company, and really it's almost the Zulu principle, you can get to know a company very well in a couple of months, you know, and in fact, you can get to know a company quite well in a couple of days if you do a lot of research, obviously. But I think that's the better way forward, spending lots of time ignoring the noise and then making your own decisions, you know. But you know, we've all been there. We've all taken advice and just bought on a tip or recommendation. And that's why I try and say on every podcast, please don't buy on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research, you know, because it's more, you get more from it when you do your own research and then start making your own judgments and it goes well, you know.
You've burnt it at that stage. And I think there are a lot of good guys on Twitter. I'm not saying I trust anybody, as I say. I take on board what people say. I still buy on tips, but I don't buy as soon as someone tips, oh, this is going, I don't just pile in.
Yeah.
I'll take away the name of the company. I'll have a look what's going on in the background. If I like the, generally the spikes are triggered on an RNS or something like that. So I'll read that RNS, but then I'll have a look over the last 2 years RNSs just to see where the company's been, what's brought it to this point today. And then if I'm still interested, I'll buy in then. But, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily because I work full time. Mm. I don't necessarily have the time during the week perhaps to research everything. So there are a lot of people out there who give tips, and I'm grateful for that a lot of the time.
Because it gives me a chance to find
companies I've never known about.
Yeah, exactly. So take them on board, your lessons, right, Mark? So what company now are you looking at that you think has a bit of potential? And this is, you know, you've learnt some harsh lessons, and hopefully you've taken those on board. Is there any companies out there at the moment that you quite like? And tell us why, for example, you like them. Or give us one company you like at the moment.
Yeah, no, I'll go for an obvious one. Again, it's everybody's talking about it, but I bought in this a few months back, and it's 88 Energy.
Yeah.
Obviously, Dave Ward was on the podcast last week. Mm. You know, it was a good insight. I think reasons why I like it, I like the management team, I like Dave. He sort of sees them talk a good game. But obviously, he's got in the background at the beginning of the project, the Paul Buzinski that he talked about, who and the large shale oil field in Texas. So he's highlighted the Ice Wine area or the North Slope of Alaska as a key area for oil. And as you said, I think on the weekend podcast, there's billions and billions of barrels of oil potentially there. It's just whether it's retrievable.
Yeah, but even that, you still like a bit of risk, though, don't you, Mark? Because even that, like I said, I don't know where he gets the figure from, but Dave Wall is quite honest in saying there's only a 25% chance of commercial oil there. And I'm thinking, I don't know where he gets that from. But I'm thinking, because there's 1 in 4 chance. So it's almost like saying, you imagine now, if there was 4 people standing in front of you, right, and you had to pick one of them, all in a box each, and one of them had money in one box, and the other one didn't have money, and you had to pick one of them, it's quite hard, that would be, wouldn't it? You know, that is hard to pick the 1 in 4. So yeah, people are still piling into that, but like I said, as long as you know the risk, you know, that's fine.
Right.
It's not knowing the risk, that's the problem. But,
yeah, that's right. I haven't got a huge amount in there. I mean, going back, as I said, I've got sort of FTSE stocks that keeping me, you know, insane. I've got some good money put aside there. My AIM portfolio at the peak, as I say, was about 12,000.
Yeah.
You know, and my current position is about 3,500. So I haven't got a lot of money in the stocks that I'm holding at the moment because I didn't have it. And I'm not putting any more of my own capital in. You know, the old cliche of the missus will kill me if I did. It's you know, I'm trying to perhaps recover some of my losses first, and then move forward. So I'm not buying into the 88E energy story to make thousands and thousands of pounds. If it happens, great. I've got a target in mind. I was looking around at 0.9p, and I'm happy to de-risk that. I'm not looking for a 100%, 200%, 300%. I think feasibly on sentiment, it's been to 0.8 before. I might even sell then. That's my sort of target. I'm not looking to make tons and tons of cash on it. I'm trying to get back to a position. But I mean, the reason I'm interested in the companies, obviously, you know, the story's there. You've got a potential huge oil farm, which I think, you know, if it does strike up oil, there's a good potential that the company sort of be reversed into or bought out by a larger company that's sort of in that area. I think the actual share price as well, if you look at it, it's got good support levels around the 0.5 to 0.6, and I'm sort of smack bang in the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 0.55, so I'm quite comfortable. And you say it's potentially still risky, but in any investment is a risk, isn't it? So I still think it's, for me, I'm happy, even if it just has a rally and a spike based on potential news, which hopefully there's something coming this week, I might sell it then, even if it's good news. If I miss out on more and more profits, then so be it. I think you can't mourn potential losses, really.
Yeah.
You've got to take profit when you get it.
Marvellous. All right, well, go on.
No, I was going to say that's fine. I mean,
Well, no, I think, you know, that's a valuable lesson. It's like, that's it. Part of the issue is people think they can earn, you know, $1 million on one trade, and or they can be super wealthy off one trade, you know, and it happens very few and far. There are people who've done it, of course there are, But, you know, it's unlikely. And also, like I said, if you have a little bit of money in there, then, you know, it holds your interest, that stock. And if it should go up and they discover all, there's always a chance to, like, scale in. You know, even if it spikes crazy, you could take some off, then put some back in. But later, on knowing that they have got a find, you know, which is a good way of playing it. Mark, listen, thanks, fella, for coming on. Very brave of you to come on and talk about, you know, some of your losses there and lessons you've learned, because I think it's very valuable. Because a lot of people are trying to do, you know, make money on AIM, including myself, and it's nice to have lessons reiterated that we, you know, we've all gone through. I think it's quite nice. So thanks for coming on, and speak to you soon. I'll put a link to your Twitter account on sharepickers.com so people can click through and follow you there. Cheers, Mark. Speak soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's it for the podcast today. This podcast, number 355, is dedicated to the one, the only, Dan MUFC Butler, who gave me this review on iTunes, 5 stars rating, and he goes, "Share Pickers." That's the title of the review. By far the best share podcast around. They get me through my daily commute to work. Keep up the good work. That's nice to know. It really is nice to know that it goes some way into entertaining that boring, awful commute journey. It's only going to get bigger, podcasts, you know. I'm going to bang on about stats here, but the stat I learned about end of next year, half of all new cars will have internet connectivity, and then in 2025, all cars pretty much will be connected to the internet, so you can search by subject in your car on your stereo, so you can search for like sport, anything, kids, any of that, and you'll be able to search all that. The frequency's been gone by then, long gone. And so, you know, what comes into play here are niche broadcasts, you know, that appeal to your interests. And that's why I'm invested in Audioboom, which is where this podcast is hosted. Podcast is the future of radio. I guarantee it. Anyway, that's but listen, do your own research, please, on anything that's mentioned in this podcast, as it's only opinion. That's all it is. And, you know, it's a nice stepping stone to do your research. So please, do your research there. And thank you for listening. By all means, get involved, suggest a penny stock, or give me a review, and that would be much, much appreciated, eh?
The ADBFN Podcast with Justin Waite.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.